From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Wednesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. Today, obviously, we'll discuss the response to the notice of allegations. Came out around 2 p.m. yesterday. Neil and I sat down, read it, made some notes, and we'll kind of take you through it, our thoughts, Ole Miss's thoughts, kind of where it's good, where it could still go wrong, and what's next in this investigation, our opinion. A lot of hot takes yesterday. A lot of takes prior to anyone actually reading the said document. That was
there is so much stupidity in the world.
That was my favorite part yesterday. Is I'm sitting down reading it, and I'm on like page 23, and I see stories popping up going everything you need to know about the NOA, and it's like
you didn't read it.
It's been 20 minutes.
It took. And I had to skim through some stuff that I was like, okay,
we knew that already, so let's move on.
Anything that was uncontested, I skimmed.
And anything from the last NOA that wasn't changed.
Right.
Skimmed.
And still, 2.5 hours to give it a decent read.
Yeah,
and a lot of call each other after an hour and a half, like, what page are you on? You're like, 48.
And a lot of the meat was in the latter pages.
Yeah. Our field is full of two things, stupidity and bias, both, in copious amounts. Raw stupidity, like I really question how you get through the morning each day, and then tremendous bias, whether it's for Ole Miss or against it. And an inability to read a response and go, okay, that's their response. We'll talk about it in a minute. Now, in less than 60 days, we'll see.
The NCAA will respond.
The NCAA's response. And then we'll have a complete sort of balanced feel as to where this thing's going.
Not 100% sure that NCAA response is public, however.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But regardless, at some point this fall, it appears that they're going to go in front of the committee and that it's going to be a street fight.
Yeah, so you're saying that Dan Wilkin writing about Laquon Treadwell was not relevant yesterday?
Yeah, look, this isn't a criticism of – it is going to come across as a criticism of Wilkin, and I don't really mean for it to. I don't know the guy. He and I don't think have ever had a conversation. I do think he's a very talented writer. He's a very strong writer. That being said, he comes across as – agenda-driven in this. How, after a 5-year investigation and now 2 NOAs, I'm not even going to use the word amended NOA, I'm just going to call them 2 NOAs, with 21 level ones, is that right?
Something like that.
Laquon Treadwell's name has never been mentioned. If you want to talk about Laramie Tunsil, Leo Lewis, Kobe Jones, Austin Golson, cool.
But he made a couple of decent points, and then I get to a paragraph, and it's talking about Laquon and Robert. Still to this day, there's media that goes, see, they signed Robert Kamdichie. It's like, it's stupidity or a complete lack of understanding of anything.
Well, see, I don't think...
It's kind of Corolla and Jeffries thing. Are you stupid or a liar?
Yeah, see, I don't think Dan Wilkin's stupid.
No. I think
Dan Wilkin's very bright, in fact.
Yeah, I do too.
He writes and speaks as a very educated person, with a pretty strong brain on his shoulders, for whatever reason, and I don't know. I'd love to know. It comes across as personal, and I think it's more against Freeze than it is the institution that is the University of Mississippi. It's difficult to, at least for me anyway, to have strong feelings one way or the other about an institution. I mean, you know, what people say, what did Ole Miss do to him? Nothing. But there's something personal there between he and Freeze.
Some individual.
Somebody. It must be somebody. But he's smarter than that, so it's personal.
Yeah.
That's what you see is there's so much stuff that is just biased. I looked at it and I used it in the, I think at the top of my 10 thoughts, I just looked at Stephen Godfrey where he said, this is an interesting, it's an interesting response because the two are now locked hand in hand and most people will tell you that's a risky approach. I'll take his word for it.
Yeah, so the NCAA will respond again within 60 days and then a COI hearing at that point. At that point, there will be deliberation and then sanctions October, November is a guess here. Somewhere in that. So we'll dive into it first, too. Podcast is always brought to you by the Oxford Exxon. Highway 6 West in Oxford. Pick up the 20 car, PLENTI.com, where you can earn points. A lot of different retailers taking part in that. Hulu, Nationwide, Rite Aid, and more there with Cradical and the Oxford Exxon. Lunch specials, rib plates at night, all those good things there on Highway 6 West. And again, coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900, 662-257-1900. Corey Clark on his way back from Chicago saw a pair of Cubs victories. His son caught a foul ball, had a good time there in Chicago. So he's probably in a really good mood when he gets back to Amory. You should take advantage of that. Call that number. Ask for Corey. Tell him what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes. And then it's up to you at that point. You can take that quote, shop it, or you can take that quote and let Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many listeners of this podcast from Missouri to Biloxi, from Atlanta to Shreveport, and that is take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. It's nice and easy, straight to the bottom line, no haggling. And then at the end of the your deal, right about the time that you're finalizing everything, say, hey, Corey, I heard about the dealership on the podcast. You can mention this one. You can mention the beer garden. There's a new beer garden dropping later today. If you want a break from the Ole Miss stuff and you just want to listen to some great NBA talk, Tony Jones was fantastic. That'll be up on the beer garden. Mention either one of those podcasts. $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
All right, we kind of break this up into some different parts to make some sense of it. You've got the old stuff, which we've talked to death, the David Saunders stuff, the academic fraud. They didn't really change anything there. There was a little bit of differences in a couple of them, but for the most part, that stuff is what it was. We've got failure to monitor and lack of institutional control. The big overarching things that don't necessarily pertain to one specific incident. It's just the overall scope of the program, if you will, for yep. both those. Hugh Freeze's failure to monitor. Or lack of head coach responsibility, whatever, and then lack of institutional control. You have Barney Farrar, I think, separated into a section. And then overarching into that, you have Student Athlete 39, who appears 393 times in said document,
yeah.
when Leo Lewis III.
Yes.
So I think those are your categories.
You feel safe in saying that name.
Well, you know, look, Ole Miss, I give you credit because it's a redacted document, but when you throw the Joker in there, I mean, it didn't take Columbo to figure this one out, in my opinion. I think Inspector Gadget would have had a shot here.
Yeah, Shalimar used to have a song called Dead. I guess they still have the song. I don't think Shalimar is still around anymore, but Dead Giveaway. Yeah.
I think it was a Dead Giveaway.
Just a Dead Giveaway.
Yeah. Okay.
You impressed with that, Shalimar?
That's good.
That's a blast from the past.
All right. Do you want to go big to small or small to big?
You know what? I'm in a charitable mood. Mm-hmm. I am going to hand you the keys. You put the hands on the wheel, and you just lead us where you want to go, and I'm going to roll the window down and enjoy the ride.
All right. Start big picture. Then we'll kind of go into some things. Because look, everybody by this point has some idea of minutia, so let's go some overall thoughts early.
Okay.
I think this is 100%, not 100, but really high, of a percentage where this is going to go one way or the other based off Hugh Freeze's failure to monitor charge, my opinion.
Okay, elaborate.
Okay. Number one, you have to realize two things here. First, the NCAA is the investigators are putting together their case, or they put together their case for the notice of allegations based on all of their allegations being true, if that makes sense. So the lack of institutional control charge, the failure to monitor charge, they went to those heightened states because of the other allegations that, in their mind, prove this systemic approach to cheating. So as you, it's kind of a domino deal. Every time Ole Miss is able to prove something didn't happen or win a specific allegation, it knocks over another domino somewhere else potentially, or it helps another case, or it does so many different things along the lines. It's a lot like you would read here yesterday where Ole Miss is responding and going, well, because we don't believe that should have been a violation, or we believe that should have been a level three or a level one, then this shouldn't be that, and here's the precedent, and the lawyer's doing lawyer things.
Right.
And I give Glazier and those guys credit, Tyner, whoever put this together. They did a very, very thorough job of presenting precedents to what they believe they are guilty of, and then kind of punishing themselves to the correct crime measure, if that makes sense.
Oh, I agree with that completely.
I thought they did a very good job of being thorough with precedent yesterday.
I agree.
So,
to the point that it was sometimes bogged down. It was so good.
Yeah. So here's what I think. I think once all this new stuff came out with Leo Lewis and we moved to the second NOA, that's what shifted Ole Miss from failure to monitor to lack of institutional control as an institution.
Yes.
They inserted the freeze, failure to monitor, separate, and then increased the penalty on Ole Miss from failure to monitor to lack of institutional control. So, to me, if freeze is hit with failure to monitor, and that sticks, and they say, no, Hugh, he had to know what was going on, you had to whatever, you're getting failure to monitor, then lack of institutional control sticks, in my opinion. That means that they believed some or part of Leo Lewis's testimony. That means that they did not believe all the Barney Farrar independent stuff, and the whole thing kind of comes crashing down, in my opinion. I think it all bases off what Hugh Freeze can prove or whatever that he knew or did not know, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. We have spent so much time, thinking, I guess just because, I don't know, I like to think of myself as a fairly logical, rational person. I know a lot of people think I hate or I love or whatever. I'm kind of just watching it. I have thought all along that at some point the two sides would meet in the middle, somewhere in the middle. If there was a 1 in 100, that they'd meet somewhere between 40 and 60. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And that the NCAA would get a little of what it wanted. Ole Miss would get a little of what it wanted, and both sides would begrudgingly admit to something and stop this from becoming a battle royal.
I'm listening, yeah.
I no longer think that. I think I was wrong.
You think it's 0 or 1 against 99 or 100 at this point?
Yeah, I do. I think that the two sides have gotten to the point where all that's left is for the guy to get into the ring and for the microphone to drop when he says, let's get ready to rumble. And then when he steps out, I kind of think they're going to drop a cage over the ring and nobody's getting out of there. One side's winning and one side's losing. That's what I think. I know it's a bad analogy. I know it's not going to be literally a fight. I get that. The two sides are completely apart. The NCAA has painted a picture of Ole Miss as an out-of-control program, lack of institutional control, failure to monitor, head coach responsibility shirked. The NCAA essentially saying, Barney Farrar did all these things, and you either knew it and didn't do anything about it, or you didn't know about it because you chose not to know about it. It's essentially what the NCAA is saying. The NCAA is throwing Leo Lewis out there as a star witness and saying, hey, we basically believe everything that he's told us, or enough of it. And then Ole Miss, on the other hand, yesterday responded with, Leo Lewis is completely not credible.
And here's why.
And here's why. And here are all of the different times where what he said either doesn't match up.
They make the point of the dude having to make 2 75-minute drives and go to his computer and doing a drop-off in 52 minutes.
Yes.
To match Lewis's timeline.
I mean, they make a very compelling argument.
Yeah.
About Lewis and his lack of credibility.
Yeah.
Ole Miss says, not only did Hugh – here's what I thought was interesting yesterday. Ole Miss basically said, Hugh Freeze may have committed a very minor violation somewhere here, but we don't think he did. We are completely in lockstep with Hugh Freeze. We don't believe Hugh Freeze did anything wrong, and here's a list of character witnesses who agree with us. And we don't believe there's lack of institutional control. And here's all the things that we did to display institutional control. We don't even believe there's failure to monitor because we've monitored the hell out of this. So assuming that the NCAA in their answer in the next 60 days says, no, no, we're good. We stand by our side of the story. I don't see how there's any room for negotiation left. I don't see how there's room for a split decision. Somebody's knocking somebody out when they get in that ring.
Yeah,
is that fair?
No, it's fair. I agree with you. And it's a deal where two things, as we dive into more specifics.
Sure.
One, this is Ole Miss's response that they had 90 days to tailor with the best attorneys that do this type of work.
This is as good of a look as Ole Miss is going to have. And that's not a criticism of Ole Miss. That's your job.
Yeah, just explaining process.
They did it extremely well.
Yeah. This is their side, their persuasive argument.
Yes.
This is it.
Yes.
Also, the NCAA has not released everything they know to the public yet.
Right.
We'll see their response, or we'll, whatever. Their response is there. What more do they have? I don't know.
I will say this quickly as an aside.
Yeah.
I do hope at some point all of the names are put in, and I hope at some point we see everything the NCAA has. There needs to be more. You might disagree.
No, there's transparency.
There needs to be transparency and sunshine on these things. This is people's lives. This stuff is – this all this redaction and protection of student-athletes and stuff, stop. I'm so sick of that. I find it to be nauseating. Put the names out there. Put sunshine on it, and let's let people determine what happened.
I have a little bit of a – my only hesitance in that is I do think before you're found guilty and we're still just – everybody, that, you know, the defendants are throwing your statements out, the plaintiffs are throwing their statements out. I do think boosters are in danger of a lot of defamation of character during those periods before they actually are found out whether they did anything or not.
They are.
Just on a broad scope,
but
not looking
every one of those boosters would be contacted by media and would have an opportunity to give their side of the story. They really would. They'd be, I have an opportunity to say, this is what's BS, and yeah, well, that happened, or that didn't happen, or that's not true. And here's how the investigative process popped up.
Except apparently they can't talk until it's over. There's gag orders on everything.
Says who?
Well, isn't that just kind of agreed upon, though?
I don't know. That's what I'm curious.
Yeah.
Who? A gag order punishable by?
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, if the state of Mississippi says that there's a gag order on a criminal proceeding, and that if you violate that, you're in contempt of court and you could go to jail. Well, okay. Hey, I'm all silent. Zip, zip.
But if it's a pat on the hand and go, hey, we really like you to shut up.
The NCAA and a school. Now, again, you're talking to somebody that has no school loyalty. I don't care about schools. It's just institutions, man, buildings, people. But you're telling me that I'm going to be defamed and I have to keep my mouth shut? Screw you. I'm talking. Everybody wants to talk. I'm having a press conference. We're having a teleconference. If I didn't do it?
Yeah.
If I'm the guy at Funky's and I'm like, I wasn't even there? Hell yeah, I'm having a press conference. Bring your cameras.
We'll talk about it.
Bring your recorders. Ask fire away with your questions. I don't get that part. So the whole, well, you know, the university asked me to be quiet. Screw the university. The NCAA wants me to be quiet. Screw them too. What are you going to do? You're going to put me in jail?
All right. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I actually need to find it. I wanted to start.
I've derailed your path several times.
No. You're fine. So, I think it's allegation number 8. If it's not, who cares what the number is? I'll start here because it's the easiest one. Rebel Racks.
Okay.
Ole Miss did as thorough of a job on disproving something in this one than they did at any point during the thing. And frankly, I will be stunned if this holds up to any degree. I think Terry Warren, I think Rebel Rags is probably in pretty good shape here from a standpoint of getting out of this one, in my opinion.
Yeah, if Ole Miss gets hit on the Rebel Rags thing, it's over. It's a total loss. That will tell you that the NCAA just said, we want to get you. They completely shoot that down.
Including a transcript here between student-athlete 42 – and Booster 8, And I'm honestly, I'm going to guess it's either Kobe Jones or Jeffrey Simmons, but I'm not 100% sure which one without looking a little closer, and it doesn't matter right now. Either way, NCAA, colon, Booster 8, Rebel Rags, Terry, whatever, didn't hook you up with anything? Student-athlete 42. No, sir. I mean, I haven't. I mean, because you know what I mean. I don't really know where I was going at the time, so I mean, I just don't want to get so much gear, but I mean, I did get the pullover and the joggers that I did get. NCAA, colon. And you said you bought that yourself, student-athlete 42. Yes, sir, I did. Also, family members did not corroborate the allegations as well. So that one is as cut and dried, at least the way it's presented to us here, as, come on, yeah. Probably throw that out.
And this, as we go forward, starts what I think is the most interesting part of this, the Leo Lewis credibility issue.
Okay, it's got to be. I think it's Jeffrey Simmons. Student athlete 42 is a 5-star prospect across all sites. That's got to be
that
Simmons.
That would be Simmons.
Yeah. So.
Interesting that Jeffrey Simmons.
All good.
Hey, man. I don't need more trouble.
Yeah.
All cool.
They also include a chart where student athletes 42 through 50. Student athlete 1, whatever that is, and family members 11, 12, 3, 4, and 2 all denied Rebel Drags allegations. So, anyway, all right, moving on.
So, if you don't believe Lewis there, and you don't believe Lewis on some of the details on the
transactions,
this is where this is interesting. If this is a court of law, and you're in the jury box, okay? And you're an impartial juror.
Mm-hmm.
And Lewis is proven to lie and or have a faulty memory. That's reasonable doubt. You look at it and you go, that's why I said yesterday, if this is a criminal proceeding, Ole Miss is acquitted. You might walk out of there going, I kind of think maybe they did some stuff. But I can't sleep at night doing the prosecution witnesses are just bad. If it's a civil case, a preponderance of the evidence is in Ole Miss's favor. Is there some stuff in the document? When I see people go, oh, well, there's nothing in there. Well, of course there's stuff in there. I mean, there's stuff in there. And there's problems with the Lewis transaction thing. What is that booster having? Why is he having this much contact with Leo Lewis? Why is Lewis having text contact with someone from Funkies? I mean, those are problems. Those are bad looks. Those are issues that from a violation standpoint, it appears that something occurred, yet Lewis can't iron out details, gets things wrong, appears to change timelines conveniently, appears to lie. In a preponderance, a civil case, I think Ole Miss would win.
But it's neither of those things.
It's neither of those things. And so...
it's just a group of people sitting around a table.
One of the things that if I'm Ole Miss, and they brought it up pretty quickly, that would really bother me, is in these immunity interviews, Ole Miss either wasn't present, didn't know about it, or was not allowed to cross-examine. At one point, not even allowed to listen impassively. Problem. If I'm the rest of the country, I look at that and go, that's not good. And the NCAA essentially takes him at his word?
If there is no more corroboration that we're not aware of, maybe the NCAA is holding something back and then we all look at it and go, okay, well, I kind of get it. But if that's not the case and everything presented here in the allegation sheet of this response where the NCAA is the one talking and alleging, if that's it, and they took Leo at his word for so many of these things, I'm shocked. I'm amazed that made it in, considering the number of things that Lindsey Miller said that didn't make it in, considering the number of things that happened around draft night that didn't make it in, considering so many things that did seem to have some level of evidence necessary. However, this was everything basically making it in, and now Ole Miss says, well, this couldn't have happened because of this, and makes it, like as you mentioned, a very compelling argument. about this Leo Lewis stuff. So if all that is thrown in, how does that get viewed? Is the committee willing to say, no, come on, Leo, you're a liar. We don't believe that. We're whatever. We'll see.
And this is where I'm with you on the whole thing. If Lewis is a liar, if the committee goes, we can't take his, he has no credibility, we have to throw everything he set out. Would you say 393?
393.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
If you throw him out, the case disappears. You don't have much. Or do they say, hey, you know what? He lied 80% of the time. And I'm just making numbers up, guys. I haven't studied.
80% lies means 20% truth.
And that's enough truth for us. So to me, this always comes back to the same thing. It might not be who the committee believes. It might be who the committee wants to believe. What does the committee want to do? You spent 5 years on this investigation. And once again, it appears that the NCAA has major flaws in the investigative process.
Agenda-driven flaws.
Yes. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, it's what it looks like.
That's how it appears. Now, again, I'm not, before anybody goes, oh, boy, you're toting Ole Miss's water. No, there's stuff in there. And I wrote about this in 10 Thoughts. There's stuff in there that if I'm Ole Miss, I'm disturbed. And they are. They're taking a one-year bowl ban. And when people say, well, Ole Miss is claiming nothing happened, no, they're not. They 1 year bowl ban and scholarship losses in a sport where depth matters. You'd rather have 85 scholarships than 75 scholarships. Got news for you. And the 10 scholarships matter. Don't let anybody tell you that they don't. They do. The bowl ban impacted recruiting. They've punished themselves. So there's stuff that happened, and they're owning it. I don't think that's what I think the investigators are going to come back and say, no, we're standing by our investigation. And so I don't know what how does the committee rule, and ultimately that's what this story is going to be about. Does the committee look at this and say, hey, you know what, he didn't tell the whole truth, but he's just a kid, we got enough, you violated NCAA legislation, we're going to add on to these penalties, which sends a message to the rest of the country, which is, man, anyone could go down. One bitter, agenda-driven kid. Or the flip side happens and the committee goes, come on, you made him your star witness?
Well, because when you read the immunity bylaws in the NCAA, it appears that not only does Lewis violate the terms of his immunity, but could potentially have immunity stripped because of it.
Yes.
Now, do they rule that? No idea. But the way the bylaws read, there appears to be proof of that.
So what if they prove that Lewis lied? Do you have to prove that he meant to lie? Or do you have to prove that he just got some things wrong because lots of stuff happened? And then he claims, hey, I took money from other schools. Okay, well, do you investigate those schools?
Yeah, major payment from member institution, whatever number was.
It appears to be either LSU or Mississippi State, one or the other. Do you go dig into those two schools? Open up the Leo Lewis recruiting from 2014? Maybe do a 5-year investigation? Jeez, 2000. Wrap this thing up in 2022. Lewis will be either in the NFL or somewhere else
NFL.
By then.
You mentioned.
How do you do that?
You mentioned a second ago, for anybody who's been under a rock or hasn't seen it, you mentioned the text message. We'll go here now. While there were lots
of... Hold that thought. I want to finish what I was saying a minute ago. It's very, very quick because I interrupted myself. If the NCAA loses here, the investigators, if the committee goes, no, we can't do this, I think the NCAA investigative arm has to go right back to rock bottom again and start over. This has been their pet project. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
You mentioned any program. It's mostly only major power programs that get nailed. USC, Miami, Penn State, Ole Miss, Alabama.
Yeah.
Ball State, not normally under the chopping block. And I get why. Obviously, you're getting primary recruits.
It tells you that we at programs like Louisiana Monroe.
Well, it's just you see all the time, you go, hey, they would never hit so-and-so. They pretty much only hit so-and-so.
You don't announce your presence with authority by busting Ball State. You hit Louisiana Lafayette real hard. Nobody cares.
They looked at that and went, Lafayette, you were kind of dumb there.
Yeah, it's kind of stupid.
So anyway, footnote on this.
Okay.
While there are plenty of reasons that Ole Miss admitted contact between Lewis and the booster.
Yes.
They've done that the entire time. They did that during the video in February.
It's undeniable, so there's no point in. Yeah.
They admitted contact. They did not admit that, or they said there was not enough evidence to maintain that cash payments happened back in February. Their footnote here, though, is about this text message that is seen by the investigators as a bit of a smoking gun. Is it? Is it not? I don't know. Just telling you that's the way the investigators see it. So I'll read the footnote. The staff did not secure Leo Lewis's phone records until the university requested them after initially learning of Lewis's allegations. By that time, any record corroborating or disproving Lewis's receipt of that text message was no longer available. The text from the booster to Farrar, preserved and secured by the university from Farrar's phone, read, quote, I need you to call me immediately. We met and agreed upon things, and now I see a former coach of yours on the Institution 13 board saying he spoke with you after school and you are going to Institution 13. What is going on? You swore to me on your daughter. Please call me. You owe me that. Thanks. Two things. One, the just how depressing that text message is all the way around.
So bad.
Number two, it's interesting that it came from Booster to Farrar, even though it is talking to Lewis. So was a copy of the text sent to, you know what I mean? Is it like, hey, I'm going to send this. I sent this. It's just a weird way for that text message to go in order of chain there.
But it came off Lewis's phone, right?
No, that's what we're saying. It did not. It came from Barney's phone.
Okay, I got you.
It went from Booster to Barney, even though it was a text that appeared to be going to Lewis.
Gotcha.
So did
Booster
send it? So
you don't know whether a Booster was saying, hey,
I send this?
Yeah.
No. It's Ole Miss's thing where the NCAA looks at it and goes, well, what deal? What deal? Why do you have such a strong stake in this that he's having to swear on a daughter? What happened? And then Ole Miss goes, well, number one, you don't know that text was sent. Number two, it says nothing about an actual cash payment.
I'm with them on part one. I'm not with them on part two.
Well, from a exact smoking gun standpoint, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right.
Well, yeah. Look, it's a bad look. Listen, I'm not defending it.
Got sent to Lewis, it is as close to a smoking gun on that as you're going to get. If it didn't get sent to Lewis, someone said, "Wait, what?" And then here's my problem. If I'm being honest, let's say the booster in question sent that to Barney, and Barney gets that text, and maybe this is where Ole Miss has an argument. As I talk through it, Barney gets that text. What should Barney do? Number one, no, don't send that. Number two, whoa, hold up, we need to talk. What are you doing? And then number three, hey, Coach Freeze, hey, compliance, hey.
Hey, let's have a little meeting here.
We got a little problem. We might have an issue. Just maybe. So at that point, that's where maybe Ole Miss is saying, hey, we didn't know about that. He got it, neither allowed the deal to go through, or he got it and said, no, don't do that. And hey, let's keep this between us. Let's take this and pretend it didn't happen. Where Ole Miss says, how could we have known? So I don't know the answer to all that. There's a lot there, obviously.
Yeah. So,
because if he's doing, if Farrar is acting as he is supposed to do in this atmosphere of compliance that Ole Miss says existed, he would have gone to Freeze. Freeze would have gone to
Matt Ball,
and they would have had a cardiac arrest, and then
that had gone from there.
And then figured it out after someone resuscitated.
Yeah,
doesn't appear to be the case.
Quick pause here to tell you, podcast brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. also the leader in the condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. Contact Jason, 662-234-2704, or JLowe, that's L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com.
I posted my 10 thoughts, reactions to the NOA yesterday on rebelgrove.com. That was sponsored by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX legacy realty agent. Harry's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than he does. It's harryalexander.com. Send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. Podcast also brought to you by our friends at Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, it's the place to go. Whether it's a new Nissan, a previously owned Nissan, or you're looking for a lease deal, a Grenada Nissan can take care of you. Go in, tell Gene and Sandy Grass. You heard about it here on the podcast. You get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. The podcast also brought to you by John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions. He knows where to put you on the fish you want to catch. Tuna Chaser Charters, located at 200 East 8th Slip C2 in Biloxi. Check out their Facebook page. Give them a call, 228-348-7817. They can take care of you whether you're looking for a quick little inshore fishing trip to a long deep-sea fishing excursion or anything in between. John and the folks at Tuna Chaser Charters can take care of you. Podcast also brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. 7 South, owned and operated by Kyle and Jordan Thornton. 7 South, equipped with the largest staff in the Grove, that can service any of your tailgating needs. They offer SEC-only packages, full season packages. They have complete rental packages available. Fans can bring their own gear, and 7 South will set it up for them. However you want to do it, they offer complete setup, game day concierge, post-game trash removal, equipment breakdown, and year-round storage. If you give 7 South a try for one season, you'll never tailgate without them again. The site is 7southtailgating.com. You can reach them by cell, 662-321-1682.
So many different places to go. One thing here, and I really didn't think about this till later yesterday. I don't even know that we wrote this in 10 Thoughts. You and I may have talked about it at some point. As I'm looking through this and kind of moving into the failure to monitor, the lack of institutional control situations, Ole Miss argues a lot of the booster involvement overall as things that were hid from the university, essentially detailing rogue boosters. I think Ole Miss's biggest issue here, in my opinion, is not looking at the individual allegations, but on the totality, which is going to be relevant to the failure to monitor and the lack of institutional control. And I give Ole Miss credit here. They've gone out of their way to really disassociate a lot of people. For whatever that's worth, if it's worth anything or not, that doesn't always happen. I give them credit there. They have put the book down on these people in this response. Whether it be permanent disassociation with some people or it be disassociation until the end of the probation period, which has happened with some people as well. But when you're arguing failure to monitor or arguing against failure to monitor, you're arguing against lack of institutional control, Ole Miss has the issue, in my opinion, of there being 14 boosters. It's not one rogue booster, not two rogue boosters, but you're claiming there are 14. And I'm not judging one way or the other. I'm saying that the committee is going to look at that or likely will look at that and say, well, that's such a big number. That's so many different things weaving through your program where either you knew about it and you allowed it to happen, as you said, in Ole Miss denies, or if there's that many, how were you really that focused on compliance if there's 14 of them willing to go and circumvent your – and I get it's over a five-year period. I understand all those things.
Yeah.
But when you look at the document, just glancing at it, it's a big number.
And I can hear people out in podcast world screaming, well, if you dug into Tennessee or Alabama.
No,
and I get that. That defense isn't going to help you any. It was a lot. I mean, I kept thinking to myself reading it, man, these names weren't redacted.
And now there are a couple institutions that are listed as booster number something.
Well, yeah, it's like there's Funkies and
Rebel Rags.
And the store itself is a booster.
And in one of them, it appears to be an attorney and then somebody who like works for the attorney and stuff. Like, okay. Right. So the number's not really 14, but it's listed as 14.
Yeah. Still a big number. Yeah. There's a lot there.
Oh, and that's arbitrary. What's a big number? What's not a big number? But either way, 14 appears to be a big number to me.
And the university showed where, hey, we send out.
Yeah, look, Ole Miss did, and we'll kind of move into this with the failure to monitor thing. Ole Miss spent pages, as they should, not this isn't a criticism, on the parliamentary way they went about practicing compliance.
Yes.
Checklists, pages, meetings, which you should do. Look, okay, you got as much digital paper as you need. Run it up and tell them all the ways you're compliant. I'm really not making fun.
I'm not making fun at
all. I'm just curious how relevant it is for the committee. And I don't know that answer. Maybe it's incredibly relevant. Maybe, because I mean, look, when you just read it, and if you're not jaded or having an outside view of some other things, you read those 10 pages about Hugh Freeze and go, well, from a paper trail standpoint, that's a lot of crap. They did a lot. I mean, there's a lot there. They educated at least to the – they succeeded, in my opinion, from a rule book standpoint, if that makes sense.
Yes.
They followed every procedure possible to be compliant from the rule book.
Yeah, the people that are out there going, well, Ole Miss, man, they just threw the rule book out the window and said, hey, we're going to get this thing done. Here we go. No. That's not the case at all. And for those of us who cover the program, we've known there's been, for lack of a better word, friction, as there should be. In a successfully compliant program, there's friction between compliance and coaching staffs at all times, because the coaching staff, I mean, the compliance people are supposed to be
the police.
Overseers, the police, though. Hey, you're going too fast. Whoa, you've committed a violation.
Yeah, hey, instead of doing this, let's go over here. There's a line.
Right,
let's just play.
Hey, what's this on your phone record? Oh, this happened. People turn in, like, the level three thing. Institutions turn in hundreds of those a year. And if you don't, then you probably need to take a good look at your compliance people. There's no such thing as a perfect, and there's no way. I mean, the NCAA rule book is like the greatest paperweight ever. There's no way that you are compliant.
100% compliant.
As an institution, unless you just hire a bunch of people who go in there and eat donuts and play on the internet all day and they don't recruit. Well, then you're compliant.
Yeah.
The moment you start recruiting, you start breaking rules.
Yeah.
Man, here's the thing, okay? And I know I'm hung up on this. Over the next few months, our challenge journalistically is to find out the best we can, how does this hearing work? Who are the people that are in that room? And I don't mean literally the people themselves, but what is their standard of judgment? How does this work? Because both sides have flaws. Clearly, stuff happened. Like I said, Ole Miss has owned it, and it's a 1-year bowl ban in place. They're not claiming innocence. I saw that yesterday. I went, give me a break. Someone said Ole Miss just claiming that nothing happened. Well, no, they didn't. They've administered scholarships and a 1-year bowl ban. They're not claiming that at all. How does this work? What is the standard of guilt? What is the standard of innocence? So how do you determine? I'm not making sense here. I'm paid to talk with words, and I'm having a hard time. But how does it work? I think we all envision, because it's only frame of reference that we have, a courtroom, a defense table, a prosecution table, a jury box, a judge with his robe banging a gavel, and people saying objection, overruled. And
see, there's not even an order to it, though. The best I understand, there's not even a thing where an attorney goes in and knows that, okay, the plaintiff's going to present a case, and then the defense is going to get to counter.
Cross-examine, and then you redirect.
That's not here. This appears to be a you speak when spoken to, and I may not ask you to speak at all. We're going to say, allegation one, you agree? Yeah, we agree. All right, moving on. Allegation two, All right.
Okay, but when they get to, like, allegation, here's my question. I get that. But when they get to, I think it's 16. Is that the Lewis thing? All the stuff
that's
about
one of them, yeah, 16.
The text and all that
stuff?
Yeah,
16.
All right, well, allegation 16. Yeah, well, we got major problems with allegation 16.
Gonna be a minute.
Yeah, yeah. We request a minute, Your Honor, sirs. So how does that work? Do they stand up and say, okay, well, here's what happened, and then Ole Miss says, no, here's what happened. Well, here's the problem. And when Ole Miss gets to say, we didn't get to cross-examine him, that's a problem. If you accuse me, if the
committee wants it to be a problem.
And maybe they don't. And I don't know. I mean, I'm so fascinated by process now.
You would pay a lot of money to be in this room, wouldn't you?
Yes. Oh, God, yes. Absolutely. From a professional standpoint and a personal standpoint, I am fascinated by this because this is the biggest giant train wreck I've ever seen, and I can't take my eyes off of it now. You are either going to the Committee on Infractions is either, in my opinion, going to look at the investigators and go, are you effing kidding me? You did this for 4 years? What the hell was this motivated by? Or they're going to look at Ole Miss and go, so, yeah, he lied a bunch, but you know what? We generally believe that he told enough of the truth, and we probably think that you did a bunch of other stuff, so bang, bang. I don't see where there's a middle ground anymore.
Yeah, barring scheduling conflicts, mostly the same committee that did the women's basketball on the track thing, we've been told that the committee, at least to some level, admonished the investigators, but this is a whole different ballgame than track women's basketball was.
Yeah, I mean, it appears, if you are to believe Ole Miss's statement, and I'm not saying Ole Miss is wrong, so yeah. I don't know. Thank God I don't read these things for a living. If you believe Ole Miss's statement, the investigators violated protocol by conducting the immunity interviews without telling Ole Miss about it. That Ole Miss found out about the immunity interviews from another institution. I always thought that the whole thing was designed for the spirit of cooperation.
It's funny how the transparency thing and the lack of leak just seem to be a one-way street here.
Yeah.
Because that's what I give Ole Miss credit. They came out swinging here in their response.
It was about time.
I would have had a really hard time holding my tongue the last how many ever months while this gets leaked to this person and this gets leaked to this person and this comes out and I'm just gnawing on my lip. Waiting on today. All right. So, continuing with that, Barney, a key figure of the Leo Lewis situation. Overarching, though, with Barney, Ole Miss, there's some different semantics on kind of how to classify it, but essentially, at least in this response, it was characterized that Barney committed the allegations that he was being accused of. To some degree, there's some that they argued, but to some degree,
yeah,
committed them, and that was done independent of anyone else's knowledge on the coaching staff, primarily Hugh Freeze.
He was an outlier, they said.
Yeah, I've got a couple things I want to read here about that.
Okay.
Says, it's actually kind of long, but it's relevant. The allegations that form the basis of this charge do not demonstrate any real fundamental failure in Freeze's otherwise effective program. Several of the allegations involve intentional misconduct by Barney Farrar, a former off-field staff member, who lied to Freeze about his conduct and worked hard to conceal his actions from Freeze and the university's compliance personnel. In one particularly telling example, Freeze confronted Farrar about the possibility of Farrar using a non-institutional phone to contact prospects. Farrar denied he had done so and committed that he would never do so in the future. Although we now know Farrar used a private phone to contact prospects, he continuously certified his compliance with the university's phone policies, and at least one recruit, Student Athlete 39, has suggested that Farrar affirmatively hid the fact that he possessed a second phone from everyone else in the football program during his recruitment, using a transcript from 2016, he'd use the iPhone whenever he was walking around Freeze or any other time, talk to anyone else. Since everything about Farrar's phone usage appeared normal to both Freeze and the university, Farrar was a prodigious user of his institutional phone, making on average more than 1,300 calls a month. So there was no obvious red flag. The other thing that was interesting to me was very, very high up in the document, still basically in the introduction. They said Farrar. Let me find it here. This is kind of how they introduce Barney in the document. And they say, Barney Farrar committed significant violations during his recruitment of Athlete 39, intentionally hid his misconduct from the university's compliance staff and his head coach, and used multiple intermediaries in his scheme. In doing so, Farrar acted contrary to the rules education provided to him by the university and by other institutions throughout his decades as a Division I football staff member. Farrar purposefully and actively circumvented the university's monitoring systems and disregarded his head coach's repeated directives. Farrar then follows this misconduct with incomplete and misleading testimony during his 2016 interview. Because of these actions, Farrar's employment with the university ended December the 8th, 2016. A lot there.
Yeah, a lot to unpack.
It is going to simply be a matter of the COI believing that Barney did all those things independent of anyone else, and that Ole Miss did its duty in compliance to find that out and was not able to.
Yeah.
Period.
Yes.
It's the easy way to just make that simple. We don't know, and this is the key piece that I harped on all day yesterday. We don't, to this point, even though I'm being told it's public record, so it will come out, have Barney's response. What did Barney say about these incidents? I have been told that, at least in part, Barney defends the university and Hugh Freeze independently. I've been told that by people who would know.
I have been told that.
I've been told that by multiple people who would know.
I have too.
Now, does Barney take every bit of blame? I don't know. I haven't read it. I have no idea. But I do think, at least in part, he defends some of what Ole Miss is currently saying.
But does Barney say, and I don't know whether he does or doesn't, does Barney say in that response, yeah, I did some stuff that, and I hid it from Freeze. I hid it from the staff. I hid it from the university. I hid it from compliance. I don't know.
Hypothetically, let's say it does.
Okay.
They go into this meeting, and yep. Ole Miss goes, Freeze had no idea. And then Barney's response goes, yeah, Freeze had no idea. If you're on the COI, even if you do go, come on, how believable is that crap?
But that's my question.
What do you do?
I don't know. That's my question. That's why I keep coming back to this. If you're the COI, are you obligated by proof? Or are you allowed to rule on an opinion, a gut feeling? No idea. Ole Miss throughout this process has been a big believer in the process. They clearly are willing to take the gamble that, hey, we've done this the right way. We've ruled on this the right way. We've investigated ourselves thoroughly. Now, we're willing to own this, this, and this, but we didn't do this. And we believe that we can generally prove it. And so we trust that you're going to do the right thing. Sort of been their deal. It's kind of been, I mean, Ross Bjork has told us, you know, that there's a process. Mm-hmm. And basically, we believe in the process.
So now the process has to believe them.
And again, does Ole Miss have to prove its innocence? Or does the NCAA have to prove Ole Miss's guilt? Is it a preponderance of the evidence? Is it any evidence? Is it, what's the standard of proof? I think that's a fair question, and I don't know the answer to it.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. Podcast also brought to you by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. MasterCuts, full-service lawn maintenance and landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding areas. No job too large or small for MasterCuts. Some of the services include landscape design and installation, landscape lighting, irrigation installation, maintenance, and turf. They even do holiday lighting for your yard during the holiday season. So if your yard's not up to par, give MasterCuts a call for a free quote, 662-607-7773. MasterCutsLawn.com. If you sign up for an annual contract, mention the podcast. First cut is on them.
Podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used them. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, their work is second to none. Comer is an American standard dealer. They work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, and you get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane at 662-832-8749. The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is offering a vehicle loan special, rates as low as 2.5%. It offers a full-service mobile app, lets you check your balances, transfer money, or deposit checks using your phone anywhere in the U.S. In addition to all the best rates and gadgets, what makes OUB special is personal service. OUB has the absolute best people dealing with customer service. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. And the podcast is also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. If you're looking to buy or sell land anywhere in Mississippi, give Michael Oswalt a call. He is a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. He's by far the largest broker of land in our state. Look him up on his site, gotland.com. That's got-land.com. Listen, the land market is hot right now. If you're on the fence about selling your land, your hunting club share, or your home with acreage, now's the time. Give Michael a call today. He's ready to meet with you and explain the process. If he can't earn your business in that meeting, he says he doesn't deserve it. Give him a call, 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com.
It appears on certain occasions that the NCAA reclassifies or brings up something from the old NOA or old evidence as a reason that is also included in trying to hit Ole Miss with some of those penalties. Is that an issue?
I mean, it should be.
It really wasn't a big deal then, but now that we could prove LOIC, it's a big deal now. I mean,
I keep saying this. Everyone in this deal keeps moving the finish line. Like, you start out on a race, and they tell you, okay, well, we're going to run 10 miles. And so you pace yourself for 10 miles. And then at about the 8-mile mark, hey, now we're running 13 miles. Okay. So you pace yourself for 13 miles. Then they come back and go, we're running 11 miles. Well, I'm going to sprint. No, no, we're running 17 miles. What the hell is it? Listen, however this thing ends, if I'm an NCAA institution, I'm looking at this. I'm back on it. If I'm the Power Five, I'm breaking the hell away from this. We're forming our own deal, forming our own rules, figuring this out. This is flawed. However this thing ends, this deal is flawed. Is that – do you disagree?
No. I have very little knowledge other than this case about the NCAA and its protocols and procedures. Very little. Godfrey, Dan Wolken, a lot of people we like and don't like across the board, have said, well, the new dude, John Duncan,
yeah,
different deal. Different that woman that was fired after the Miami thing is director of enforcement. Can't remember her name, but whatever.
Whoever.
She was the assistant AD at some Horizon conference school, I think.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Wright State or somewhere.
Somewhere.
So, UW-Milwaukee. Yeah. I can't name anymore. So, okay. Said it's a new deal. They don't just throw stuff against the wall. They do this. They don't do that. You know, then John Infante, who's an expert on NCAA protocol and cases, big time expert, he says that Miami wasn't throwing stuff against the wall. It was overreaching on a slam dunk case, and those are not the same thing. And that's what got them fired, is they overreached on something they had plenty of proof on because they wanted to put even more of a hammer on someone. It doesn't right now feel like it's a new administration and a new NCAA.
If it is, they messed it up again.
Yeah. It feels like they're still not, unless we're missing something, it just hasn't been thrown at us, and there's a big Colt revolver over here that just hadn't been tossed into the ring yet. Something's amiss.
You want, I think we all, unless you're a sociopath, you want justice to be administered with a level head, without prejudice, whatever that is. You don't want people to be falsely accused. You don't want the guilty to walk free. There's so many flaws in this thing. I cover college sports for a living, but if I'm a fan somewhere, and I don't mean an Ole Miss fan or a Mississippi State fan or somebody who's all emotional about this.
But someone just invested in college football.
If I'm a Kansas State fan, an Oregon State fan, and I'm looking at this from the outside, I'm saying to myself, so a disgruntled former recruit who didn't come here could get us? I have a problem with that. So much of this is built around Leo Lewis. Because if you throw out like the Rebel Rag stuff, right? You pretty much throw out like Kobe Jones.
Yeah.
The Austin Golson thing's a hunting camp deal. It's a level 3.
No one disassociated.
Yeah, okay. Shouldn't have done it. It's a mistake. Whatever. I've heard people go, well, you know, Gus shouldn't have let Austin Golson talk. No. Let him talk. He apparently told the truth. All the Austin Golson jokes aside.
If I was a coach, I wouldn't let my kids talk.
I probably wouldn't either. But in this case,
I'd have Nick Saban didn't went, nah.
But if you're going to talk, talk. Tell the truth. No one's disputing his claim.
I guess that's kind of my point. I don't know that a coach could or should trust the player to tell the truth. I think it's a flaw in the system too. They're not under oath.
Right.
There's no legal ramifications for anything they're doing. It's a little flimsy for me with an 18-year-old kid.
It's a lot flimsy. You don't have the right to cross-examine? And Lewis won't be in Indianapolis. That's the flaw in this, man. Lewis is such a big part of this. Or did they videotape his testimony and let the committee see it? Does the committee read a transcript? I'd like to read a transcript. What questions were asked? What were answered? There's just so many issues. It's not a very good look. I mean, I know people at Ole Miss trust the process. You're more trusting than me. I'm too cynical to trust this process. I look at this process and think, this is not a good process.
We mentioned earlier Leo Lewis and how Ole Miss didn't have abilities to whatever. Let me just read that footnote quickly as we kind of get close to finishing, because I think that's also relevant on the ways they went about trying to find out information from Lewis themselves.
Okay.
In addition to the inconsistencies, the lack of corroboration, and the contradictory objective evidence, the denial of these allegations is based in part to the lack of any timely, meaningful ability to probe Lewis's story or his credibility. The university is particularly concerned that these allegations were born of initial interviews with Lewis that were conducted without notice to and or participation by the university. There's a lot of footnotes I don't care about. Moreover, after the university was brought into the investigation and allowed to attend Lewis's second interview, Lewis's counsel instructed Lewis not to answer the university's line of questions, and enforcement staff did not demand his continued cooperation. The university was not allowed to attend or even passively listen in on Lewis's third interview. Further, when evidence led to the university requesting that Institution 10, I'm assuming State, help with a limited interview of student athlete 39's coach, I'm assuming Dan Mullen, rejected the request outright. Prior to submitting this response, the university sought permission from the committee to interview both Lewis and Mullen, but the committee denied that relief. That's a problem.
Oh.
Huge problem.
Oh, God.
Maybe the biggest problem in this from an NCAA procedure standpoint.
Got to fix that, don't you? If you accuse me of a crime, I'm going to get an opportunity to defend myself, including by confronting you. That's the way that works. Yeah. Ole Miss should have an opportunity to have a dialogue with Leo Lewis. That's not even about fair, it's just about due process. So how does the committee view that? When the committee hears, and I assume that they will now hear it, we didn't even get a chance to talk to this guy. We shot a gazillion holes in his story, but we didn't get a chance to talk to him. If I'm the committee, I'm thinking, well, okay, investigators, why did they not get to talk? Why did you not let them listen in? Why did you not ask some of the questions they wanted asked? And if the answer is, well, just because, well, that's not good enough. Now, if the answer has some validity, well, here's exactly why. Okay. So I don't know how much that, I mean, I can't even imagine what that answer would be. We didn't want to ask those questions. He was our star witness. We waited 4 years to get a star witness. The draft happened, and it opened it back up, and even though we didn't find anything as pertains to Laramie Tunsil, we finally found someone who would talk. So we granted him immunity because he was a recruit who had his hand out throughout the process, and he did, and everyone knew it.
He admitted multiple schools.
Yeah. Ole Miss knew it too, which begs the question, why with the NCAA on campus were you even fooling with Leo Lewis? There's lots of stuff here that it takes. We could unpack it. We will unpack it for months.
Yeah.
But it just, my central question at the end of this after watching it was, so how does this work? Because somebody, I have spent so much time thinking that we'd find a middle ground that I don't think the middle ground exists anymore.
So we'll go from there. Again, Ole Miss does as good of a job on paper as they could have done in a lot of areas. Still a lot of questions too. A lot of allegations that they admit some level of guilt to. So we'll see how that pans out. The matrix is not really their friend when you start counting. It's the irony in this. The NCAA wants this big scope and overall look to prove so many things. Whereas Ole Miss also kind of needs a big scope and the issue of it being multiple years to avoid some of the matrix-level penalties that could come out just from that level of punishment. So we'll continue to unpack throughout the days, weeks, and probably months leading up to the next step of this investigation. You can read Neil's thoughts on the board at rebelgrove.com. Also, the document itself is all over the internet and on our site in a PDF form if you'd like to spend 3 or 4 hours and dissect that also. So there's our initial thoughts. We'll talk to you again on Friday for the next podcast. Not tomorrow, Friday for the next podcast. And we'll continue the conversation then.